Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Press Coverage. I'm your host, Kyle Senra, and joining me for this episode is Matt Hicks. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. I appreciate you wanting to join. This season three of Press Coverage focuses a lot on teachers in the football content creation sphere and people who play fantasy football. So that intersection will be great. We'll get into all of that. Of course, as always, this whole show is brought to you by Going for Two Live. Appreciate Jeff Lambert, the founder at goingfor2.com, for creating this live network for us. So be sure to head over to the Going for Two Live YouTube page. Subscribe there, like the video. We're also available on Twitch and Facebook if you want to connect and join us in the chat. The videos will stream on Twitter as well, but we can't see your Twitter comments in the feed. So if you do want to interact with us, again, we suggest you head over to the Going for Two Live YouTube page. And I've got tons of questions for Matt, but of course, if any of the listeners do as well, feel free to ask them. I guess, Matt, before we get started, we do have bills to pay. We got a sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. I'm sure everyone knows about Underdog Fantasy, but for those who don't, and for those who haven't joined yet, we have a promo code, GF2, or a QR code, as you see on screen. If you either enter the promo code or scan that QR code, you'll be given access to a double deposit match when you sign up for Underdog. So whatever you put in, up to $100, Underdog will double that. And so if you put in the max $100, you'll have $200 in your account ready to go. You can play tons of different contests, tons of different sports. Football will eventually be there. I mean, I guess XFL is going on. I guess that just ended. USFL. I'm a Canadian, so CFL is starting in less than a month, so excited for that. But of course, hockey playoffs, basketball playoffs, MLS playoffs, or season. I always forget. Soccer's weird. But fantasy football is what we really know, right? And Underdog has best ball drafts available as well. So again, use the promo code GF2, scan the QR code, and you'll get access to all these great contests on Underdog. But yes, one of my favorite shows on this network, of course, not biased, not an Underdog, it's the favorite, but yeah. So Press Coverage, we like to get to know the guests. And Matt, I guess we'll start at the very start. What are your first sports memories?
Well, that's a great question. You know, baseball was my first true love. So, you know, grew up playing baseball, 4 or 5, you know, all the way through. So that was always really the sport for me. I was a catcher, I was a pitcher, you know, all the way up until high school. Then we started to branch out a little bit into football and some other sports. So, you know, that's all the way back for me, thinking about T-ball, the oversized shirts and everything like that. So
that's the thing in every sport. I remember playing basketball with the oversized shirts too. So yeah, that's, I guess, you know, we're so small as kids, everything's oversized, right?
Right. Yeah. There's just one size. It's just like big, you know?
Absolutely. Then I guess transition to if that's where sports started for you, when did fantasy sports start for you anyway?
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty sure I'm nailing this down right. I think, you know, the original like fantasy football home league, it was like middle school. So I'm thinking 7th grade, you know, so what are you like, I don't know, 12, 13 in that range. So, you know, a good ways back. And, you know, it was funny. It was like we were playing Superflex and we were playing Keeper, and it was, you know, we didn't really know what we were playing, but it was just the format we preferred. And then, you know, I kind of, you know, as I went to college, it kind of, you know, became a secondary thing. And, you know, after I finished grad school, it kind of picked back up fantasy football. And it was like we picked it right back up from then and started really learning what these terms were, you know, like Dynasty and Keeper and Superflex. And, you know, it felt like we kind of just like it took a little bit off, but it started back at the roots of back in middle school.
Well, I mean, if you were playing Superflex that early, sounds like you were ahead of the curve anyway. So you could afford to take time off and still get to where, oh, everyone's finally just caught up with you.
Yeah, I think like ESPN, you know, it was originally like the ESPN leagues that we played on. And I think they called it like OP, like offensive player or something like that. And then when it clicked in my head that was Superflex, I was like, oh, my gosh. Yeah, I've been doing this for years, you know.
Of course. Yeah. So, yeah, so ahead of the curb, and I guess that's the early look at, I guess, student athletes, and I know that's a big part of what you do with the rookie big board. I guess should I introduce like where you were at, but I guess you're learning fantasy. There's also someone's got to teach you, right? So it seems like you guys all learned pretty young, but when did you first get the inclination that you wanted to teach?
Yeah, so that's interesting. So, you know, I should say my path in education is probably a little bit unique. So I don't work at the K through 12 level. I work at the college level. So, you know, working in higher ed, it's a really interesting field. It's a pretty niche field. You know, there's not a lot of folks necessarily working in the field. And so, you know, I had no idea it was a career path. I was a first generation college student. So nobody in my family went to college before me. And so, you know, I was at college, I was getting involved. I was doing, you know, all those things at a college campus that you can do, leadership positions and being an orientation leader and peer tutor and, you know, working pretty much every job on campus, just kind of like learning about all these different things. And, you know, kind of got to the point where I learned I could do that, you know, as a career. And so, you know, so about my junior year of college, I decided that I was gonna, you know, get a master's degree in education and kind of work at that secondary level. So I would say I found it, you know, a lot later. There's a lot of folks who know, you know, in high school or in freshman year of college, like I want to be an educator. I want to work in education. And I never thought that would be me, you know, all the way through, but it just kind of found me later on in my college career.
Well, and I guess, you know, yeah, I suppose since that's where you got the inclination to first want to teach, it makes sense that that's also where you geared to what you wanted to teach, what level you wanted to teach at.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I say all the time, like I have a lot of friends who, you know, work at the K through 12 level and so much respect for what they do. But I just couldn't do it, man. I just couldn't do it. But, you know, I think it's a really fun point of development. Like I know for me, you know, going from, you know, when I was 18 in college to even 19, right, or 20, or by the time you finish 21 to 22, it's such a huge developmental stage in people's lives. And so, you know, I love to have the opportunity to be like a positive impact in that developmental stage and, you know, kind of help guide folks and get them ready for, you know, their career path, but also just to be like a positive member of their communities, you know, whatever that means for them after graduation. And so, you know, that's a lot of what I do now. I teach leadership courses and leadership trainings and, you know, run some large programming and stuff like that, just to kind of help that really critical developmental stage.
We've got Jamie, the Cleveland connoisseur, chiming in. So saying what's up, fellas. Thank you, Jamie, for joining us. I will say it's pretty interesting because on the previous episode of Press Coverage, we had Janet Wilson. And while she this year, I believe she's teaching fourth or fifth grade, she's customarily taught kindergarten. So we're also showing the extreme spheres of what education is. So I did like that, like you're bringing that different perspective and going for the college level teaching. Was that tricky to, I guess the question is, when did you first enter the profession? I guess my question is, how old were you? And if it was that young, was that difficult to be teaching people in your same age range?
Yes. That's a really good question. It is a challenge in the field, you know? So basically I went right from undergrad. So I graduated, just shy of 22 when I graduated. I went right to grad school. You know, oftentimes folks will take a couple of years off before getting a master's in my field, but I went right to grad school. So when I got my master's degree, I was about 24. When I was getting my master's degree, I was a graduate assistant as well. So I was running a first year program, or, you know, helping run a first year seminar type program while I was getting my degree. So at that point, you know, I was 22 and kind of supervising 20-year-olds and 21-year-olds. And so and then my first job out of college actually was working with, was focusing on a transfer student population. And oftentimes, you know, transfer students have kind of a unique path to get to their higher education. And sometimes, not always, but sometimes they've been at an institution or two. And, you know, you have what we would call non-traditional aged learners as well. So folks, you know, 25 plus. And so I was supervising, you know, folks that were older than me. You know, my student leaders, the people I was educating were older than me, in some cases when I first started. And, you know, that was a really cool experience for me, because I really believe that, you know, you don't necessarily, you know, you can lead in a lot of ways, right? You don't need to lean into a power dynamic or lead into an authority dynamic to be a leader and to supervise and to guide. And, you know, I think that those opportunities really challenged me to live up to that mantra, right? And And, you know, I think so much of teaching is learning as you go. And so, especially in those first few years when I was so close to others in age, I was really learning as much as I was teaching. So that was a long-winded answer, but I'm glad you said that because you nailed it on the head. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I work with families too, because I do new student orientation. So I'll work with families and sometimes they'll come up to me and say, oh, what's your major? You know, thinking that I was one of the kids too. And so you're always going to have to reassert yourself in a way.
Well, it was education. That's why I'm teaching this.
exactly.
But yeah, I guess when you're learning on the fly like that, like transparency is probably also key, and like to, I guess, connect with the students in the sense that I'm learning from this as much as you are. And then I guess that can help create empathy and create the links you need.
Yeah, I tell my students all the time, you know, so like one of the big populations of students that I work with, they're called, you know, orientation leaders. So if folks are familiar with, you know, the college environment, oftentimes you do like a new student orientation, right? And it's this really pivotal time, you're learning the college, and we use upperclassmen student mentors, right, to guide the new students through this. And the first thing I tell the students is, you know, the best way to lead is to be authentic, right? You don't need to know the answer to everything. You know, it's great if you know how to get somebody to an answer, but, you know, 17-year-olds, man, they got the best BS meters out there, right? So if you're lying, they're going to know. And so for me, it's always about being authentic. You know, I don't think anybody expects you to always have the answer, to always be 100% correct, right? But they want to be able to trust you when you do give them an answer. And so, yeah, you nailed it with that authenticity. It's critical, man. If you're not being an authentic leader, I don't think you're really leading in a lot of ways.
For sure, because you expect that to be part of the thing you're teaching to future leaders. And, you know, you should demonstrate, you know, practice as you preach, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing too. Like, I love that you said that, practice what you preach. Like, if I'm not being authentic, how am I going to expect my students to be authentic? Right. And they're the role models, right? I think that's what's so cool. I mentioned, you know, working with orientation leaders, those are the first students that new students are seeing. So they're saying like, that's what it means to be a student here. And so if they're seeing somebody who's authentic and vulnerable and willing to be empathetic, then they're, you know, okay, that's what it means to be here. You know, if you see somebody who's BSing and is just kind of there to, you know, be in a position of power or to look cool, then, you know, maybe that's not the best first impression.
And I guess speaking of being there, I guess being here, we do have a few people in the chat. Brian Ford, who's also a teacher, I'm looking forward to getting him on the show at some point. He says, this is a great guest. I don't know if he's trying to, Matt Hicks, is that a pun that he's trying to make there? But always appreciate your support, Brian. Love to see you there. Toronto Dave, also there, fellow Canadian, woohoo. Appreciate Dave shows up a lot, so appreciate that. And then it's funny because I think Jamie pays enough attention. He's clearly always here because this was going to be my next question anyway. So thank you, Jamie, for asking. I don't even have to say anything. Just, well, I guess we have audio only listeners, so I will ask the question anyway. But Jamie asks, / Kyle saying, do you ever use fantasy football to incorporate any lessons, or do you have any leagues with your students?
Yeah, that's a really great question. You know, I do tend to kind of keep my two worlds separated to a degree. You know, I always think it's funny. Sometimes students will just, you know, they know I love sports. So, you know, I don't always talk about this sphere of my world with students all the time, but I love it. Sometimes they'll just come in and just be, you know, talking about what they're doing on different apps and stuff, like, you know, picking up prop bets and stuff like that, and just, you know, talking about sports. So I love doing that. You know, don't, you know, formally coordinate leagues. I've in the past, you know, when my coworkers find out, you know, what kind of my side hustle is, you know, we'll get some office pools going on and office leagues and stuff like that. But not so much with the students. But I've heard, you know, I've heard of folks who are doing that, and I always think it's so cool.
Yeah, I know Kevin Coleman. I think obviously every guest we've had this season is, I think, at some point used fantasy football or the lessons from fantasy football in some way or shape or form. But I know Kevin Coleman, who's the season premiere of season 3, also formerly at Going for Two. So that was a special moment to have him come back for that. But I noticed on Twitter he was talking about leagues he was doing with his classes this year, and so
yeah. And I don't want to, I don't know if you're leading into this question, I don't want to steal it, but, you know, I actually think I I use concepts that I've learned in education more for creating fantasy content, like kind of the other way around, to answer that. And, you know, especially when, you know, when you're talking about community building, like I learn a lot, I'm focused a lot on community building in my work. And then, you know, if you think about like what the Rookie Big Board does, I would hope folks that, you know, are a part of the Rookie Big Board and are in the Discord and are constantly interacting with the work would get the idea that it's supposed to be a community, right? And it has this community feel. So, you know, to answer Jamie's question in a roundabout way, kind of the other way around, instead of using football and putting it into work, I use work and put it into football.
Hmm. Learning about education, right? Learning about teaching. So of course you can transition that to a bunch of different places. And I do agree, Dave. Shout out to Kevin. So correction. I will correct this. Apparently, it's the I guess, I don't know if it's your intro. This is the Rookie Big Board, I guess.
Yeah, we'll usually do a long drawn out. So Brian knows this is the Rookie Big Board. So yeah,
that's way better than me. You clearly had practice.
I think Brian's heard it maybe a few too many times.
I know Brian. Well, Brian's all rainbows and sunshine about this rookie class. He says there's too much doom and gloom in the industry about that. So he loves the rookies. And I guess he also loves the Rookie Big Board as an extension.
I was like, you might be able to blame that community that I was talking about for that optimism, but I'm proud of it.
Well, and I guess, yeah. So as you kind of referenced, the next question was going to be the parallels between your time in the fantasy community and your time teaching. So is there anything else you'd like to add to all that?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to steal your next question, but I'm glad it feels like we got that natural flow going down here. But, you know, yeah, I would really say that, you know, I think for me, a lot of what I've learned as a professional, you know, are things like listening skills, empathy skills. And those were things when I was, you know, 21, 20, I thought I knew how to do. You know, I used to think I was a great listener because I always had an answer, right? But I wasn't ever really listening to what people were saying. You know, I just wanted to give them an answer. So, you know, I think for me, you know, those types of things, how to interact one-on-one with people, how to really get to know them and kind of build that relationship with them is, you know, really critical because you would think, you know, how much could you really get to know somebody that you're mostly interacting with over Twitter, over Discord? But, you know, I do think that there are skills and ways that you can make sure that you're paying attention to what people are telling you and you're listening and you're asking questions back of them, and, you know, remembering things and, you know, being willing to bring those things up and, you know, making sure you always keep in mind, you know, like with my students, I always keep in mind that they're not just students, right? They're people first. And so, you know, even when I'm giving somebody fantasy football advice, you know, they're not just, you know, patrons or they're not just people in the Discord, right? Like they are people first. And, you know, that kind of factors into the way that you approach everything you do, whether it's something fun like fantasy football or whether it's something that can be stressful like being a student. It all kind of, you know, ties into this relational nature.
Yeah, for sure. And we could, I'm trying to find a way to relate that to the next question, but your transition game is a bit better than mine tonight. So that's, well done. I guess now we'll dive into the to the real Matt Hicks. We've talked about, you know, your career, but I guess you as a person, who have been your biggest influences in your life?
Ooh, that's a good question, man. Biggest influences in my life. You know, I think that's such a hard question. There's like so many directions that I feel like we could go in right now. You know, I do think for me, like a lot of what shaped my work ethic and, you know, kind of, you know, this desire to always want to grow and develop and be more, you know, I do think a lot of that comes from my family, comes from, I would say, my mom in particular. I feel like that's kind of stereotypical answers to say your parents, but, you know, I think that's really kind of, you know, I think that's really kind of driven me, that, you know, drove me to be, like I said, the first person in my family to go to college, to, you know, always take advantage of extra leadership opportunities, to take advantage of, you know, whatever opportunity is thrown my way. And I kind of try to apply that and carry that forward in what I'm doing. But I also think it kind of factors into, you know, the work that I do. You know, it's like, you know, just the fact that I'm crazy enough to have a 40-hour a week job and to do, you know, probably another 20 hours a week worth of rookie big board every week. And, you know, just kind of want to be innovative and grow and develop and also like be of use and be helpful and, you know, and have a passion for what I'm doing as opposed to just collecting a paycheck or, you know, just, you know, doing a side hustle, you know, certainly not doing it just for the money, either one of my things, either my career or the side hustle, you know, fantasy football and education. It's not exactly a way to get rich, but I like to think that through these things too, you know, I'm giving back and serving. And I would say, you know, my family, especially my mom, you know, always that service mentality, always giving to others.
Driven to make both places better, like whatever the college campus you teach at or the fantasy community, you're just trying to make both spaces better, positive places where we, and also provide information and help people learn.
Yeah. You know, it's you know, it can be a tough world sometimes. And so whenever you can give people spheres and spaces where they can be themselves and get excited about things. And, you know, like I've totally, as I've grown older, you know, totally leaned into like willing to, you know, like fantasy football, it's a little bit of a nerdy hobby. Okay. You know, it's like watching, you know, cartoons and like, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, it's nerdy and just kind of leaning into that because it's who I am and giving people space to do that too. Man, it's so valuable. You know, it really can be so valuable for folks. It make the biggest difference, whether you give somebody, you know, 30 minutes of joy through a day, through a podcast, or, you know, just having a space in the, you know, in the Discord where you can rant if you want, or share photos of your family or your pets and stuff too, as much as you can ask a trade question or something like that. It can make a big difference.
Well, you're teaching, right? And you're teaching even now, because apparently there's a lot of significant life lessons here is what Dave's comment is. So thanks for teaching us about Matt Hicks, because I'm sure you teach about a lot of different things, whether it's the rookies or your leadership classes. But I guess you get to teach about the real you, which, as you mentioned, you throw your authentic self in both your other spheres. But now the focus is fully on you for a little bit more. We'll talk fantasy.
Yeah.
And I guess, Dave, you can take notes, but also know that the show is, you know, you can always return back and watch it again on the Going for Two Live network after the fact. So come back and watch it again if you need. sorry. So football is a big hobby for you, clearly. Are there any other hobbies?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I feel like I like to do a little bit of a lot. You know, I'm definitely a big video games person. So I've been spending a good chunk of my life on Zelda the last couple of days, have gotten into that. You know, love to be outside as much as possible, you know, working out. I don't know if I would still consider myself a runner. There was a point in my life where I considered myself a runner. That was a really awesome opportunity for me to like challenge myself post team sports. So running, biking, you know, doing those types of things, you know, also, you know, pretty much all sports, you know, obviously football, college football, you know, Saturdays are for college football, but have been one of those Americans that have gotten, you know, into F1 post Netflix and Drive to Survive. So big, you know, into Formula One now is kind of a side hobby as well. So a little bit of a lot I tend to find.
All right. So yeah. Is there a specific Zelda game?
Well, you know, I'm not like, I gotta say, like, I haven't always been the biggest Zelda person, and not, you know, because I disliked it, just because, you know, I've never really like focused in on it, but just got the new one, you know, Tears of the Kingdom, and losing a lot of hours to that. So I've definitely been enjoying that, you know. I tend to, you know, I growing up, I was really like a sports video game person. So, you know, I've been challenging myself lately with some of these, what I would consider more difficult games, you know, games that have more of a puzzling or a more, you know, storyline arc you have to follow. So I've been trying to push myself in that direction instead of, you know, just firing up my 315th dynasty in NCAA 14.
Why NCAA 14? Was there anything about that year specifically as opposed to the other ones?
Man, that's just the best game. Well, it was the last one they made. So, you know, so NCAA 14, I had to get the PS. So I should say, you know, back when that was fresh and new, I loved it, played it all the time, you know, wore that thing out. you know, lost it over the years as kind of the next gen games came out. And during COVID, actually, you know, went back, bought a PS3 off eBay, bought NCAA 14 off eBay. It was like more expensive than a new game because now they're rare. So, you know, and just connected, you know, reconnected with the game. And it's so funny because, you know, I would sit there and be playing on my PS3, NCAA 14, and just watching my PS5 just, you know, gain dust. And, you know, almost felt guilty like I wasn't playing the new console. But, you know, there's just something almost nostalgic about it. But it, the game really holds up. Like, it's still really fun to play. People still update the rosters. So you can still get, like, last year's rosters on there. And I'm sure they'll have one for this year coming up shortly as well. So... It really has, you know, stood the test of almost a decade now.
Can I get the 2019 LSU team? I mean, Chase and Burrow and Jefferson.
I bet you could. I bet you could. But there's a roster out there. There are a group of folks who actually go through and update all the rosters and keep them in a log. It's a really amazing service that they're doing for us all.
Yes. Yeah. The true heroes.
Truly.
I guess you've shared a bit, or you've shared quite a bit. Also, Jamie's sharing that Zelda on N64 was revolutionary. I don't know if Jamie's talking about a specific Zelda game. I know I hear a lot of people talk about Ocarina of Time a lot. What's the new one called? Something about Tears of the Kingdom?
The new one is Tears of Kingdom, yeah. I should know the name of the N64 Zelda. It's the Ocarina, I believe. That was like the last one that I like really played was on N64. So I skipped over like a whole, you know, obviously like a couple decades of it, but you know, yeah, I remember like being a kid and playing on the N64 and playing, you know, Zelda. So that's, you know, some pretty early, you know, kind of core memories there.
Well, I've got to know quite a lot about you, but is there one thing that no one in the fantasy community knows that you'd be willing to share with us today?
Interesting. Oh, that's a good question. Let's see. I feel like the thing I don't talk as much about is work. Let's see.
Well, I guess we've got a lot of work.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I would say, you know, I don't know how interesting it is, but, you know, not a lot of fantasy football representation from New England. I've lived all around. You know, I grew up in Connecticut. I went to school in Tennessee. I lived in Maryland for 6 years and moved back about 2 years ago now to the New England area, to the Connecticut area. And so, you know, there's a small but mighty group. You know, we met up last year in Boston for Scott Fishbowl. I got to interact with some folks there. And so, you know, I like to rep that New England pride as much as possible and, you know, kind of that small state. But there's a decent amount of us. You know, I feel like, you know, not every fantasy football analyst is from the state of Ohio.
I guess it makes sense that the Expo's in Ohio because of how many people are in Ohio, it seems, but yeah.
I swear, man, I don't know, like, the state of Ohio, like, they're doing something right there. I mean, they just, I feel like when I first got into the Dynasty game, I was like, does everybody live in Ohio? Like, I'm jealous, you know, those folks are so close together.
Apparently, Dave's shouting out Daddy's home. Mike is his
name. Yes. Boston area, I believe, Massachusetts, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah,
that may be why he's shouting him out. I was wondering what the reference was. Thanks, Dave.
Yes, I believe, you know, Dave's pointing out some other New England folks.
Oh, Matt Kelly apparently is also from.
Yeah, area. See, you know, small but mighty. You know, we're putting out some folks here.
My first inclination was Zach Reed.
Okay. Yeah.
So
it was cool. You know, I think there was like. I think we got up to 50 last year with the Scott Fishbowl, and you know, that was really cool. And that was, you know, what I love about that too is it's not just analysts, right? So you have the folks who aren't putting out content and are just the, you know, I think Scott would call them fans for the Scott Fishbowl. And so, you know, that was really cool too, is just to be able to kind of have that interaction with both sides of it.
Yeah. Dave wants to shout out the Tacit Assassin himself, Zach Reed.
Yes. Yeah,
definitely not a dummy, even though that's what his podcast is called.
No, certainly not.
Bob Gilchrist.
Even Bob, has the Bob accent, was apparently. One. Yeah, Bob gets a lot of credit for organizing. I believe he was one of like the one or you know, I think there was two or three like key organizers for Boston last year, and Bob was definitely one of them.
Well, I mean, he is the Cleveland connoisseur, so it probably makes sense that Jamie is, in fact, from Cleveland. And yeah, close to the Expo. I think it's, what, like an hour drive? Hour and a half?
I'm jealous.
Oh, you're jealous of living in Cleveland. Okay.
being close to the expo. But I have, I have visited Cleveland. You know, I'm on it's a long journey to hit, you know, all the baseball stadiums. So I have been to a Guardians game. I've been to Cleveland. You know, Progressive is a pretty nice field, and it was a cool little downtown area around there as well. So I'm not a Cleveland expert, was only there for a few hours, but it was nice.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah, I guess, we've exposed a lot about the expo and about, the fantasy football community. So let's actually talk about fantasy. I guess just to shout out, So Dave, when he went to the expo, he said he stayed in Cleveland a few days. See, I just went straight from Toronto, Oshawa, technically, but sort of Toronto, like 7.5 hours right to Canton. And then that was a Saturday. And then the Monday, did it right back. So, yeah, that was a lot of driving.
That was a lot of driving.
Oh, 35 minutes from Cleveland to the expo. And no offense. Cleveland kind of sucks. Okay. It does not rock, so the song is misleading. And I mean, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is there, so I guess that's something. That's why I'd want to visit, to be honest. I guess the Scott Fishbowl is funny because it fuses, like you mentioned, the fans and the analysts, almost like the fantasy fanalists or something.
Right. Yeah.
But yes. Rookie big board, all the you know, what you do in terms of scouting incoming rookies and college players. I may have an idea of where you're going to go with this, but I've been wrong in the past, so maybe I'll be wrong again. What is your preferred league format, Matt?
Preferred league format. Yeah, there's a lot of caveats. Okay, well, I guess the easiest one is Superflex. I'm not playing in a league unless it's Superflex, most likely. At this point, I love Devy Leagues.
That's where I figured you were going to go.
Yeah. I love Devy Leagues. You know, I love the idea of Devy. I think it's a really fantastic genre, hoping to really, you know, I hope that my work is helping to grow it. You know, for me, I really want to grow the love for that game. You know, if you think about it, you know, you have the big sphere of fantasy football. And although the community of Dynasty feels large to us, right, in the grand picture, it's this little sliver of most folks who play fantasy football. And then within that sliver is an even smaller sliver of folks playing Devy, right? But every year I find more and more folks are willing to give it a try. And, you know, there's so many ways to format your league where, you know, you put Devy caps on it it's only an extra two guys in college. You know, you can do a ton of different things. To kind of just dip your feet in a little bit of getting to understand Saturdays more and understand college football more and give you something else to watch for, and kind of get you invested in the evaluation process too a little bit more. So I love that part of things. I love the way it blends the worlds. You know, what I say all the time is I love NFL. You know, I'm a big NFL fan. Love college football. Like, I will take college football over the NFL any day. And so Devy really kind of gives me an opportunity to lean into that and put that knowledge to use.
I guess just with Devy in terms of how it can be set up, as you mentioned, like the number of players, like the cap you put on it, but even, because I'm in one Devy league and what we do, Scott Connor organizes this, another Ohio guy.
There you go.
But the rookie and Devy draft it's just one draft. It's six rounds. And there's limits, like you mentioned. I think it's a total of 18 Devy players per year can be taken, 12 in the first five rounds, and then six in the sixth round.
Oh, so that's a cool,
that's interesting dynamic. And the sixth round usually takes place in like August, whereas the rest of the first five rounds will usually be June. So
that's fun. Yeah.
It makes it so those sixth round picks are more valuable than fifth round picks and usually fourth round picks as well. Cause by that point there's no Devy players left. Like, they're usually, you get those 12 gone in the first two rounds, at least half the first two rounds is usually Devy players in that format. But have you seen a lot of it being combined, like Devy and rookie drafts in one draft combined or separate, or I guess, like you said, such a variety and a mix of everything.
Yeah. You know, what I like is that there is a lot of flexibility. I do combine rookie Devy. Let's see. I have, I run, three Devy leagues. Two of them are combined rookie Devy. you know, I think it, especially if you're looking, so I would call it protecting the Devy pool or protecting the player pool. If you're looking to protect the Devy pool, meaning not too many guys can get taken early, you know, it's a really good way of doing it so that, you know, if you play in really deep Devy leagues, sometimes you get to the rookie draft and it's not that much fun because anybody who's a valuable rookie has been on a roster already. So if you do kind of what you were saying, only 18 guys can get taken, or only, you know, sometimes it's, I put a roster limit. It's only three. You can only have three Devy guys on your roster at any time, right? That could help kind of protect the player pool so that when you get to the rookie Devy draft season, you know, you're still, it's like, instead of it being kind of, you know, oh man, this pool is kind of weak. It's like, you know, do I take Anthony Richardson or do I take Caleb Williams, who could be at the top of next year's group? So something like that, you know, that makes it really fun. And then you have extra dynamics. And what I find is, and I'm rambling a little bit, but what I find is in the Devy leagues, there's way more trading because there's more picks and there's more players to trade and there's less consensus on value, which makes things really fun. So I see way more trading in my Devy leagues than I do in my dynasty leagues.
And feel free to ramble again. It's press coverage with Matt Hicks, right? Your name's in the title. You can talk as much as you want.
That's good. It's a different format. I'm sure folks know they listen to rookie big board stuff. I'm very succinct and to the point. So whenever I'm talking more than like one point at a time, I'm like, get back on track.
Well, no fear here. We're going to go everywhere again. We'll chime in with the viewers and anyone who wants to comment in the chat. Like Dave's mentioning, I guess we're pumping up Cleveland. We insulted Cleveland enough. So apparently the West Side Market was cool in Cleveland. And just going to plug some other shows on the Going for Two Live Network, including what'll be, you know, I don't do press coverage every Monday. Alternate with Gladys and Jay, who do the 2-point conversion. And Jay chiming in on his drive home and listening in, supporting. So appreciate that a lot, Jay. And for anyone watching, you can see again, you can comment through Facebook, Twitch, or YouTube. As again, suggest everyone head over to the Going for Two Live YouTube page to subscribe. And then that way you can get and see all the shows. Get, you know, hit the notification bell. You'll get live updates for every show, whether it's this one, the press coverage, the 2-point conversion, as I mentioned. I know Speak on It, they'll be on tomorrow. Danny and Dee, always love them. Of course, Jeff and Ryan. I know you know Ryan Serfoss pretty well. They're always on every Wednesday on the Armchair Show.
Oh, yeah. And lots of... I talk with Foss daily.
Yeah, Foss is great. Fantastic Foss. And I guess Jamie agrees that the West Side Market's really cool, but he hasn't been there in 20 years. That's kind of hilarious. I guess Jamie's cash paid condo that was revealed on an episode of Speak on It. So if you want more information like that, just even watch the comments sometimes. But yes, and as he's plugging it, Cheat Sheet Tuesday. I know. Jamie's on that. Jamie, I don't know if you guys are going to be recording tomorrow, but usually they'll be like 9 o'clock, sometimes 10 o'clock Tuesday night. So let us know, Jamie, if you guys are on for tomorrow. I know the Dynasty Gambit, my other show I co-host, will be on Thursday as well. So yeah, tons of great shows on the Going for Two Live Network. It's always great to subscribe and join on. So I feel like you may have answered this question earlier, actually. What one rule in fantasy that you have to have in every league? Because the first thing you said was Superflex. Has to be Superflex. And yes, JB, I'll quickly interrupt here. And yes, Fantasy Cheat Sheet tomorrow at 9:30. So tomorrow you'll probably get Speak on It around 7:30. And then once that's done, Cheat Sheet at 9:30. So yeah, Going for Two Live Network, always bumping on Tuesdays. But is there, aside from needing Superflex, is there anything else that you must have in your leagues?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I run, this might have been a good one for when we said, you know, what's one more random thing. But, you know, I run a series of leagues. I call them the DCLs, the Dynasty or Devy Community Leagues. And I have 7 of them, and they all have like the wildest rules, you know, kind of like really intentionally. They're all very different theme. They all have very different rules. But I've kind of picked up on some trends and some things I like best. I will say, it's not a rule that I have in all my leagues, but you know, I would say something like I'm trending more to is taking away positional requirements. And so in a lot of leagues, I'll do, you know, two super flex spots and then X number of flex spots. So 7 flex spots, 6 flex spots for the, and then, you know, we'll give out different bonuses to still incentivize different positions. But, you know, I have found myself really trending towards that style and that format. I just think it makes for some really fun roster building. I find it leads to more trades. It leads to more action. Usually most of the rules I'm doing, I'm trying to create more action. And so that's one I've been leaning towards. I'm just looking at my rules doc here and I'm trying to see, you know, with the one rule that maybe is in all of them. You know, it's, I do have one rule that I put in all of them, and I guess it's not like a technical rule, but you know, the clean version of it is don't be a jerk. but you know, you could kind of plug in,
right? Yeah. Breaking Bad.
Yeah. You can kind of plug in what you want. And it sounds kind of funny, but you know, sometimes you just kind of like at the end of the day, man, like my leagues are for fun. You know what I mean? Like there's decent payouts. It's nothing crazy. You know, it's nothing too wild, I should say. And it's just there to have fun and for people to chop it up and have friendly banter. But you know, if you're coming in there and causing a stir or doing something else, you know, we don't need you. And so that is one rule that I put in all of it, and it's very rarely invoked, but it's nice to have it in the rule sheet. It's just a little line there that says, you know, at the end of the day, just don't be a jerk. We don't need that negative energy, right? In what's supposed to be a positive community.
Well, and playing for fun was one of the first things you mentioned when you first started fantasy as a kid. It was just super fun, right? Yeah. So you want to just keep that fun, engaging energy throughout the leagues, and that's we do this for fun, right? So that's supposed to be like fun.
What are we doing? You know what I mean? Like at the end of the day, like, and you know, I respect the high stakes game, and you know, people who are got, you know, the formulas down and the payouts and the cat, like all that. You're playing at that level, like do your thing. I appreciate that, but that's just. It feels like that's not the game that I signed up, you know, to be a part of, you know? And so listen, hey man, I like payout season just as much as everybody else. I like to think I do pretty well, but you know, usually that's going back into that money's going back into the equipment, right? For the rookie big board to put out better product or something. That's usually where the money is going to. And you kind of know that's part of the investment going in for me anyways, like that's my approach.
Yeah, for sure. I think of the biggest league winnings I had, I immediately bought this current laptop I have, which is way better for streaming than what I used to have. So yeah, it was, well, I got this big league winning, may as well just keep getting better. Apparently Brian doesn't like to join exotic leagues, but he did join one of your DCL leagues. So plugging the rookie big board patron, you're plugging lots, whether it's the cheat sheet tomorrow or big rookie big board. It's all great.
Yeah. You know, what I think is really great, and, you know, a lot of people kind of come into it and, you know, so, you know, for example, Brian, you know, joined DCL3, which is, it's a 16 team league. There's 4 copies of every rookie, but you can only have rookies. You can have an unlimited amount of rookies each season. You can only have 6 sophomore players on your roster, and then you can only keep 2 players who are 3 years or longer in the league. So it's this rookie centric league, right? So it's totally wild for somebody like Brian who's saying, like, you know, I don't like these exotic leagues. But what I find is, you know, you kind of get into it and you just have fun with it again, right? Like it's a $30 pain in that league. You have fun with it. And then all of a sudden, like folks, you know, we call it like a sicko level status. They'll be in all 7 of the DCLs, or they'll keep picking up more DCLs as they get introduced every year. And so there's very few people who are only in 1. And they tend to be, you know, kind of a little bit. I like to play around with the 16, the 24 team formats. One of them is even 36 teams. So, you know, we have a lot of fun with it.
Awesome. Yeah. Fun. That was the name of the game, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Or teaching and helping out, which apparently Jamie does too, because he says he's always hopping in leagues posted in my Facebook group, helping them fix their stupid rules, and then they're always appreciated, then I leave. This is how you fix it. Okay, bye.
It is really funny. Sometimes you'll get somebody who posts a question, and they'll be like, here's my league format, and you're like, why? Or... oftentimes people will be like,
my question,
right? My commissioner did this. Is this normal? They're like, that is not normal. Like, don't be doing that.
I was in a league where the other day, I think it was May 11th, just 4 days ago, the commissioner literally sent out trades to every manager in the league trying to get everyone's 24 first. And he ended up getting five trades done, like all in the game. And I suppose you like that the commissioner is trying to get future picks, because that means, okay, like the commissioner doesn't think the league's folding, right? It would if he was selling every pick in the future, that's when you get suspicious, like, oh, this league might not last. But I think that's sort of the opposite's true, so I guess that's a good sign. So just because something's weird doesn't mean it's always bad.
That's funny. That's a vote of confidence, definitely.
Okay, so it's Jamie's. He administers the Facebook group, so he's kind of just helping out everyone in there. Let me fix your stupid rules and leave. Man, Jamie's always got the best comments. I appreciate you so much, Cleveland Connoisseur. Mr. Cleveland Connoisseur. Sir Cleveland Connoisseur. That sounds better. But you know what sounds great? Talking about the best fantasy players ever, or certainly what we view as the best fantasy players. So, Matt, who is your all-time QB1, RB1, wide receiver 1, and tight end 1?
Oh, my gosh. All-time?
You can go back to NCAA 14 if you want, or even earlier.
Right. I'm trying to think now of like the time period when I first would have started playing. Let me double check my I'm pretty sure like my early years it was still LT. Like it was still LaDainian Tomlinson. I'm double checking my math here real quick. Yeah, so like early years we were still doing some LaDainian Tomlinson, like the 2007, 2006, 2008, like that range. Mm-hmm. That was like kind of when I was getting started. So I remember
he was
like
still smashing then. So yeah.
Yeah. He was smashing then. There was I remember there was a year. I think it was the Brett Favre, like Vikings year. Ugh. I ended up winning the league that year because I, you know, got him super cheap. So like those are like the fun things like you still remember now, right? Like that's so ridiculous that I would remember that. So
his year with the Jets was so bad that people were like, ah, he's fallen in drafts, so we don't want him.
Right, he was like free basically. Yeah,
he's washed. You know, he's gonna retire.
Right. So not
and
that
he
I, you know,
had a couple good years the Vikings.
Not that he needs any praise with his world off the field, but I do remember that. Back in the day, like that was a big deal that he had kind of come through and had that rebound for fantasy purposes. So, you know, I don't know, like my favorites don't jump out, but I kind of think of those like wackier things. Like Matt Forte,
which to be
I remember
fair,
had a really good run in that stretch too.
Oh yeah, Matt Forte was great. I mean, before McCaffrey, he had the record for receptions in a season by a running back, and that's his record that McCaffrey broke. So. But yeah. The truth is, the guest gets to answer however they want. So however you view all-time players, you can choose to answer that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think it's so funny. Like in my head, I always, you know, I always kind of go to like all-time prospects and, you know, who people didn't like and, you know, the busts and stuff like that. But yeah, it was, you know, it's fun. It does remind me back of, like I said, you know, going all the way back to the start of the episode, you know, kind of that just like fun period of time.
For sure. Jay's. So, I mean, everyone's got their own version of how they'd answer this. For Jay, he says Kurt Warner, LaDainian Tomlinson, Randy Moss at wide receiver, and then Gronk at tight end. You've got the running back with the most.
I think it's got to be Gronk at tight end. Yeah. I think that's perfect.
Well, I think with LT, that's the player with the most touchdowns ever in a season, scrimmage touchdowns, and then Randy Moss, the most receiving touchdowns in a season. So definitely, I've got my, full press coverage. I'm wearing the full press coverage shirt today. I've got the goal line guide series that I write in season. And then last year I did a whole touchdown projections for every team, every player, just touchdowns. I know Foss was giving me, he was heckling me a little. It's like, well, just do full projections. It's like, yeah, that's
okay. Hold on. You can't let Foss heckle you on full projections, because guess whose projection template he uses to do his projections?
Ah, that's why it looks so great, because I have seen his projections. He does
my
do
work.
Clean,
don't,
I guess.
Don't let Foss take credit for that projection sheet.
Ah, well, good job. They look great, Matt.
That's funny.
Yeah, yeah. I've brought on Foss on the Full Press Fantasy Pod a couple years in a row now just to talk about his projections, and then I did a series this year of touchdown projection. So I think that kind of, that was like a three-parter, like AFC touchdowns, NFC touchdowns, and then, okay, what does Foss think about projections? So that was fun. Yeah. I'll probably plan to do something like that. But I love touchdowns all the same. And I will lean into, you know, trying to predict touchdowns, because I it seems like people do kind of, you know, stay away from it. And oh, it's touchdowns are random. But I don't know. I think there's one thing I have to go back to is
Travis Kelce's getting 10 touchdowns. You know what I mean?
Well, it's funny because I think this is the only year he's actually hit double digit touchdowns.
Yeah.
Was this season just now, which, I mean, he's moving up, right? So it's a good time to go by him. But
still going.
Yeah, one thing I've got to do right now is go back and look at how close I was last year, team to team, but also player to player. I'm sure there were some players I was super off on. I'm sure there's some players I was pretty close on, though, but we'll in due time. But now it is time for the high five section. So we're going to talk about your top five, Matt, in five different categories, starting with top five artists and bands.
Ooh, top five artists and bands. Okay.
You could do two different top fives. I don't need to make you work overtime if you don't want to, though.
Yeah, we'll combine them here. My favorite band, it's a little off the beaten path, so you may or may not know it, but I'm a big A Day to Remember fan. So I'm kind of in that, like, punk alt is mm-hmm. kind of like my big thing. Or at least, you know, kind of growing up, that was a big thing. You know, along those lines, big, you know, Blink 182, Green Day, that sort of thing. Also definitely like a big, you know, hip hop fan, like big Lupe Fiasco fan. Chance the Rapper, you know, I'm a big Chance fan as well. So I guess that's five right there. I could go on for a while, like big All Time Low, Yellow Card, you know, all those types of bands. Or kind of, you know, that's, I feel like it's like one long genre there.
Mid-2000s punk. I love it too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's with a little bit of hip hop, you know, mixed in there as well, and rap. So, yeah.
I've heard of A Day to Remember before. I feel like I don't remember any of their songs though. One day I'll remember. Have you heard of Billy Talent? Because that's usually my answer to mid-2000s punk rock.
No, I don't think I know that one.
So they're a Canadian band. Dave likes A Day to Remember.
I've seen A Day to Remember live twice, and I've seen Lupe live twice as well. So both really good shows live. They both do a really good job.
To tie into your work environment, he saw Lupe at college. So
see, there you go. Yep, we do lots of concerts at the college level.
Yeah, similar taste. And yeah, I figured Dave would know because Billy Talent is a Canadian band. They're from the Greater Toronto area. It's punk rock, but maybe a touch of metal, not so much, more on the guitarist Ian DeSaw, like types of tones he's using, stuff you will really hear in metal. His use of extended chords, it's not just straight power chords like a lot of punk bands. So it's punk rock, but a little bit augmented, we'll say. Which I think
I got some Spotify searching to do after this.
All right, so you go. So yeah, and you mentioned five great bands, and maybe people watching will search up A Day to Remember now. So if they remember to do so,
it's a good time.
We'll go next with top five books.
Books, oh boy. let's see. As an educator, I feel like I should probably have a quicker answer to this.
It's funny because someone I can't remember who it was, but someone this year of one of the teachers that was on the show I don't read, so can we change it to a different, like, I think I just replaced it with TV shows instead, so don't feel bad.
I could probably do sitcoms easier.
Sure, yeah, all right, well, changing on the fly, top 10 or top 5 sitcoms, Matt.
Oh man. I have a list that I go through. So, you know, you would call them like background shows, but I always have three shows on rotation. So New Girl is my favorite TV show all time. I've watched New Girl through it probably about 10 times. So just such a good show. Parks and Rec and then Brooklyn Nine-Nine would all be in that genre for me. Really, really good shows. Deciphering between the other two, I will say, like, you know, Community is in that genre as well. Mm-hmm. Ties into education there.
I'm just thinking that.
You know, I wouldn't say the most realistic depiction of the educational world, but a fun depiction still. So Community is great. as well. And let's see, you know, in that same genre, gosh, there's a lot. I'm a sucker for a good sitcom for sure, but you know, I would guess I would give a shout out to not sitcoms, but like all the new Star Wars. I really am appreciating those, especially the Mando series. So I would add those in there.
Yeah, Disney's done way better with the shows than the movies, I'll say.
Yes. Yeah, I know. And I'm like, you know, like I'm a Star Wars fan. I'm not the biggest star. You know, I feel like I call it like the Harry Potter syndrome. I feel like you kind of have to like love it. And I always like liked the movies, but the shows I like really like. And so I'm definitely get more into those.
I will actually say that Disney has done well with the non-trilogy movies, because I thought Solo and Rogue One were both amazing. And the trilogy they made,
You know, it's hard. It's hard.
Some of it's really good. Last Jedi is awful. But yeah. And usually, because to me, like Empire Strikes Back is my favorite. Like they nailed the second one like so perfectly in that original trilogy. And yet the very most recent trilogy, that was probably the one they messed up the most. So Jamie loves New Girl, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And knowing Jamie, this is really not surprising. He likes Modern Family with Al Bundy. So there we go.
There we go. Modern Family is great as well. Sunny.
Yeah, Dave's talking about Always Sunny. I love Letterkenny. I'm also from Sudbury, so back to more Canadian content. And just
There you go.
It counts as a sitcom.
Arrested Development should be in that category as well. Arrested's great.
That show's got like a cult following. Like that's the Harry Potter syndrome. Like you're gonna love it if you're a fan.
Yes, yeah, and I got into it real late. But man, it's such a good watch.
Well, it's funny because this comment by Dave does eventually circle back to what we were talking about earlier. Trailer Park Boys. Yes, of course. Canadian classic.
Dave's got a theme here with Always Sunny and Trailer Park Boys.
East Coast. I mean, that's the way it is. Jamie says Trailer Park Boys is his favorite Canadian show. So
there you go.
I think mine would be Disnefter, but that's just me. Dave's favorite Billy Talent songs are The X, Try Honesty, and Red Flag. And Red Flag was on one of the Chell video games. And man, those NHL video game soundtracks were amazing. Like 98 had the main theme was Push It by Garbage. 2003 Jimmy Eat World, Queens of Stone Age was on there, Default, Papa Roach, and then 2006 with like Franz Ferdinand, Ash, or 2005. I mean, maybe 2006 as well.
Man, that's a vibe. That's a whole vibe right there.
Yeah, Chell soundtracks are great. 2003 is like that's my favorite sports video game is NHL 2003. So
amazing. Yeah, such a good era for NHL. That's a game, and you know, I'll still get the newer ones like every maybe 3 or 4 years, but that's one for me, like simple is better, you know. Just give me some fun gameplay. Yeah, that's awesome.
Everyone loves 94. That's the one everyone always talks about is 94, even though it's the worst graphics, but it's the best game.
Just keep it simple, man.
Hockey players like things simple. That's a very hockey mentality to have. So,
you're Canadian. I'll let you speak on it.
Fair enough. Stanley Cup playoffs are happening now. Again, you can, we'll plug the sponsor again one last time. If you want to, enter contests about NHL games. I mean, there's today's game 7's already started, but you can for round 3 anyway. Underdog promo code GF2, scan the QR code. But we've got a couple more questions to get through here. So we've talked about sitcoms. Now, Matt, what are your top 5 movies? I know we've already referenced a couple, but
movies. Oh man, love the Guardian series. So controversial take. I don't like love the Marvels, but the Guardians are definitely up there for me.
Talking about nostalgia, there's a nostalgic soundtrack, so that's
fits. Gosh, I mean, just killer soundtracks, just absolutely awesome soundtracks. Let's see, best movies. I mean, football, you know, Friday Night Lights. Love Friday Night Lights. That's a real classic for me. Good TV show. You know, the TV show was a fine spinoff, but I would say, you know, Friday Night Lights is probably like my favorite movie. Let's see here. You know, it's a, you know, I'm a sucker for the holiday classics. Like, you know, we love Elf in this household. We love, the new Grinch, the newest Grinch. Everybody has their favorite Grinch movie. So that's, I feel like Christmas is like movie season, you know, not like movies all year round, although I appreciate them. So, you know, I would lean into those ones as well.
A couple more NHL standouts. I assume that's what this is. Misery Business by Paramore, another mid-2000s punk rock band. Steady As She Goes. I don't think the Raconteurs count as a punk rock band, but it's Jack White, so it's still awesome. And yeah, apparently Elf is phenomenal, according to Dave.
Yes,
and Matt as well. Both clearly love it.
I wish I was at that same level. I will say, too, because of Elf, you know, that reminds me, you know, Will Ferrell, Semi-Pro is the most underrated movie in the world. I love Semi-Pro. Will Ferrell is just, like, absolutely hilarious in it. So that deserves a shout out.
Not just semi-funny, fully funny.
Fully funny, yeah.
Fully funny fantasy. But yes, which is, you know, that's what fantasy should be, right? Full fun, 100%.
There we go.
Yeah, I'm eventually getting to those transitions. well, you know, as part of, you know, if you know, movies are with Christmas season, then sports is kind of always associated with food, right? So
yes.
Oh, apparently Dave loves your movies, by the way, because he says Semi-Pro is fantastic.
Yeah, me and Dave are just vibing.
Awesome.
We're gonna get him on this part two. Get Dave on this.
Yeah, maybe we'll get Dave on sometime. But yes. So yeah, as mentioned, yeah. To Christmas is to movies as sports is to food, so we can stress eat while we're watching our teams. What are your top five favorite game day foods?
It's a good one. You know, keep it simple, man. Like some good wings. I love a good steak and cheese. Like throw it on the grill, chop it up. You know, that's a really good one as well. Let's see, game day foods. Those two are big, you know, you got to love like the snacks, just like the simple pretzels, especially like the soft pretzels, the little bites, those little guys, those are good. And then, yeah, like just whatever like junk food you got around, honestly, I'll munch on pretty much anything.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, half, if I were to make a list, like half would be like cookies and like brownies and all the sweet stuff that's not actual meals. But yeah, we've got chicken. Dave has a whole menu ordered for us already. Chicken wings, we've got chips and dip, a veggie platter, and yeah, go in the steak and cheese sandwiches too. There we go.
I'm chicken wings now. Man, like underrated chicken wings, like you double fry them in the air fryer, like they hit nice and crispy. Yeah,
there's a place in Sudbury called Doghouse, and they serve a flavor of wings that have bacon on it. They coat it in maple to get the bacon to stick to the outside of the wings. And yeah, those are the best wings I've ever had.
Yeah, that's a fun combo.
I'm a big bacon guy. So yeah, you can note on anything, it'll be the best version of that thing.
Yeah.
Now we'll, again, rookie big board. And you've been, how long have you been scouting players?
Yeah, so officially the rookie big board itself goes back to, let's see, make sure I get this date right, goes back to about 2019. I would say the 2018 season was, now I'm questioning my math now. Yeah, 2018, yeah. The season before. So actually the 2019 season was the first one I'd say I gave it a real scout, like approach at a process. So 2018, you know, I was coming off of grad school, you know, trying to feel out, you know, creating content and kind of doing a little bit of everything content wise, you know, kind of feeling out. Then I went through like one draft season and was like, yeah, man, like I love college football. This makes a lot of sense. You know, I would love to start honing in on this, but I don't really know what I'm doing. So I kind of just like gave it a shot of a year of doing it by myself, trying to create my own process. And then I did a year of creating content. And I wouldn't say it was the best rookie content, you know, but over those 2 years, I learned a lot about the rookie process and the draft process. And, you know, that's what I talk about all the time. Like, you know, don't feel like you have to perfect it to get it started. Right. And so, you know, like I said, it was almost like a 3-year process of, you know, realizing that I was a little bit more interested in this and then giving it a shot on my own and then giving it a shot as creating content. And then I did a year of doing rookie content and tracking it and having a formula and a system down. And then kind of right before we hit COVID, you know, I'd kind of decided like, this is what I'm passionate about. This is what I'm most excited about. I've honed this formula. I think it's unique. You know, I really kind of have learned what the NFL values and tried to translate that with some fantasy football historical production and what I can extrapolate in my eye on tape now that I've had like 3 years to build up what I'm looking at on tape and compared that to scouting processes. And, you know, I said like, all right, let's give this rookie big board thing a shot and really kind of launched it leading into that, rechanneled the different efforts I was doing, contributing to a lot of different projects and having my own project and, you know, kind of started the Patreon and just wanted to see if it would catch on. And, you know, that I would say, you know, that was just about pre-COVID. So we've been pushing, you know, we're just at about 3 years now of doing the rookie big board, you know, proper through Patreon, through, you know, its own product. And man, it's been really cool. Like I still remember when I hit like double digits, I was like 10 people, you know, 10 people want to pay me for this. And now we're at, you know, pretty much 200. And it wow. just grows nice. Like it exponentially every draft season. So it's so cool for me that so many people like share that passion and want to engage in it. And, you know, like I'm looking at rookies all year long. Like I'm getting set up now to start watching 2024 tape and you know, take those notes down and working on how I'm going to do my summer scouting series and videos. So, you know, it's a long-winded way of saying, you know, at first I was like, let me just try this. And then once I decided that I wanted to do this and I saw this niche and I saw this opportunity to be unique in the fantasy football sphere, which sometimes can be difficult mm-hmm. to create unique content and something that feels original and you can get excited about. And so I just ran with it. You know, I really did. I just ran with it and I'm still running with it and, you know, tweaking and trying to be innovative every year. And, you know, I don't, you know, every single year I find something to improve on. And you know, what I get excited about or what I try to do, and hey, this ties all the way back, right? We were talking about being authentic, you know, every year, you know, I talk about it on the podcast. Here's what I tweaked. Here's what I learned last year. You know, here's what this rookie showed me. Here's how I changed my projection based on this. And just, you know, willing to lean into the process of it and not sitting here and saying, you know, oh, I'm going to get 100% of rookies right, which obviously nobody's going to do, right? NFL doesn't do it, man. If I could do it, I'd be in a front office.
Yeah. Not even a scout, like GM, like right to the top.
Right. Exactly. All the way up, man.
This whole episode has been talked about teaching and learning, right? And both of those things combined. To be fair, we've got people in the chat teaching us how to make wings. So Dave says, pat dry, toss in seasoned baking powder.
Ooh, okay. I like that.
Jamie says, make wings in the crock pot, then broil them in the oven.
And you're saying fry them twice. Like you need that crisp, right? The crisp makes the wing.
And I guess that's how you get, like you mentioned, in the air fryer, just frying them twice, and that second yeah. time gets the crisp.
Exactly. But the broiler is a good idea. Yeah, save you some time there too.
All right, so there we go. Now all our viewers and listeners can make wings.
There we go.
But all to say, we just thought that the discussion about scouting leads us to our final of the high fives. So Matt, who are the top five college prospects that you have ever scouted? And I guess this goes back to 2018, technically.
Yeah, top five. I'm just going to cheat here because I have a tab. I keep a list of my all-time evaluation. So highest ever was Trevor Lawrence. Bijan came in right under mm-hmm. Trevor. So he's number two. And it is a super flex system. So
yeah.
Trevor, Bijan, Justin Fields is right there. Still very optimistic about Fields. Burrow is right there as well. Herbert. So I was much higher than most mm-hmm. on Herbert. So, you know, I would put him up there. You know, it's cheating a little bit, but you know, Justin Jefferson is one of my favorite evaluations ever. Justin Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb, both in their respective draft classes, you know, nobody, I shouldn't say nobody, they were not the consensus wide receiver ones.
They were my wide receiver ones.
Certainly not Jefferson. Like, there's some drafts you saw Lamb go first, but a lot of times it was Jerry Jeudy, though.
It was Jeudy, yeah. And I remember, like, that was the first year that I was really putting out, you know, content around, you know, really focusing heavily on the draft, right? And I learned a valuable lesson of, like, you know, that first year, like, it was tough of, like, sticking to your guns because everybody liked Jerry Jeudy more. But I was watching the tape, and I was like, you know, I like Jeudy, but, you know, what CeeDee Lamb was showing me was just so much more. And, you know, I learned, like, all right, stick to your guns, man. Like, you'll be – trust your eye. Even if you're wrong, like, you know, be willing to be right and trust your instincts as well. And, you know, I should clarify, you know, Justin Jefferson, he wasn't my highest pure grade that year. But when I put him into the projections, I saw, like, dude, this guy is going to pop. And so I had said a lot, you know, on Twitter – like, guys, he's going to be the wide receiver one rookie-wise this year. And, you know, sometimes you read the comments when you put something out there, and it's really tempting to change your take because people will just eat you up in the comments. But it's fun to circle back to those later on.
Or laugh at you. Like, apparently happened to Jay. He traded into the spot to draft Justin Herbert, and apparently his whole league laughed. And now he's laughing now. So good job, Jay.
Yeah, he's laughing. And I remember, you know, it's so funny sometimes. And, you know, Herbert got a little bit of this narrative. I guess Josh Allen got way more of this narrative, but sometimes it's like, you know, people will go back and say, well, you didn't get it right. Like, it was just an outlier, or, you know, you just got lucky. And it's like, all right, you can make that claim if you want, but he's on my roster. You know what I mean? So it is fun to be able, you know, that's part of the process. You can have fun with it. It's fun to be able to gloat a little bit about getting that evaluation right. And, you know, when you talk about Devy, that's one of the things that's so fun about Devy. I mean, if you can identify somebody when they're a freshman in college, like, this guy's going to be a stud, and you can brag to your league mates when it's rookie draft season, like, guys, I've had him on my roster for 4 years.
Yeah, you got the proof,
out that, right? He's good. Yeah, like, that's on you, man. I knew.
Oh, that's awesome. And I'm sure everyone's appreciating what they now know about you, Matt. So thank you very much for appearing on this episode of Press Coverage.
Yeah, I appreciate the invitation. You know, it's fun, a little awkward to talk about yourself, but fun compared to the normal guest spots I get to do. So I appreciate it.
Well, glad. I was hoping it was more fun than awkward, that's for sure.
That's good. You know, a little awkward's always good. I like to think that's healthy.
You can have fun being awkward. There you go. There's fun in everything, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And again, we always have fun here on the Going for Two Live Network. As mentioned, tomorrow night, Speak on It, I believe it's 7:30. And then, as Jamie mentioned, the cheat sheet will be at 9:30, including the famous Cleveland Connoisseur co-hosting alongside Matt and Jordan. So check out Foss and Jeff on Wednesday. And then if you were able to tolerate listening to me or somehow enjoyed listening to me, I'll be back on Thursday. I'll be doing the, I guess, same time, 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dynasty Gamut this Thursday. And then Brian Ford, who's also in the chat, he always on every Saturday night for the Dynasty Saturday Night Five. They're usually live at around 7:30 on Saturdays. So, and then, yeah, next week it starts all over again. On Monday, it's instead of Press Coverage, it'll be 2-Point Conversion. And then, yeah, it just keeps the week going through there. So, again, be sure to subscribe on the Going for Two Live Network on YouTube. And once again, we'll give one more spot for the underdog sponsor. Again, use the promo code GF2 or scan the QR code on screen, and you'll get a double deposit match when joining Underdog by via either of those two methods. And they'll match up to $100. So if you put the $100 in, you'll get $200 in your account to participate in the Underdog contest, whether that's pick'ems for sports or best ball drafts, because we all love drafting.
Oh, yeah.
But Matt, thank you very much. You want to let people know, I mean, we've talked about the Rookie Big Board a lot, so I think at this point there's a patron for Rookie Big Board. You can join that. But is there anything else you'd like to plug or you know, a handle if people want to follow you?
Yeah, at the @FF_educator appropriately on Twitter, YouTube, Rookie Big Board, you know, YouTube and your favorite podcast feed, we're on it all. And then, you know, patreon.com/rookiebigboard, rookie dynasty, Devy rankings, Discord access, seasonal projections, all that good stuff. You know, $3 a month for that. So pretty accessible in that way.
Awesome. Jamie says, great show. Jay saying thanks for making traffic fun, guys. You see, there's fun in everything, right?
That's the theme of the show. There we go.
Dave sending his love. Love all the support from everyone. Dave, Jamie, Jay, Brian. Let's see, did I miss anyone else? I think that was the crew tonight. But yeah, appreciate everyone for tuning in live, or anyone who's listening on the audio feeds. Appreciate all that support we're getting. I guess press coverage will be back in 2 weeks. Since again, the 2-point conversion will be on next Monday. So look for a press coverage episode on, I guess, Monday, May 29th will be our next. I don't have the guest booked yet, so that'll be, I've got work to do over the next 2 weeks. But yes, appreciate that. I'm on Twitter at Senator Says. And again, follow along on Twitter at Going for Two Live, or check out Going for Two Live YouTube channel, and goingfor2.com for a bunch of great sources of articles about DFS, Dynasty, Redraft. We've got our rankings on there right now. Dynasty rankings and rookie rankings are there, and the Redraft rankings will be populated and will be on the goingfor2.com website shortly. Yeah, and we have a Discord. So discord.com/goingfor2, and it's free. Tons of great channels. I know Scott Fishbowl, there was, I think we claim this, and I think correctly, like not false claims, like this is legit, that the Going for Two Discord had the most Scott Fishbowl mocks of any site or any or platform out there. So I know Scott Fishbowl time is approaching, so even if it's worth it just for that alone, but we have tons of great channels, just general fantasy football talk happening all the time. It's great. You know, Foss is in there too, ripping me about not having full projections, but no, I love Foss as well. But yeah, love the support from everyone. Again, thank you, Matt, for joining us here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. This you made it such a fun episode of press coverage. Bye for now.